So out of all the holidays that we have a lot of them, Pesach is probably the most overwhelming one, okay? There's so much that we need to keep in mind going into Pesach, whether that means Pesach cleaning, whether that means, you know, matzah and chametz and maror and charoset and everything else, and wine and things like that. There's so much that we need to know. And there's a reason why our grandmothers and great-grandmothers went crazy about Pesach, and still do. The reason is because it's not a simple thing. Chametz on Pesach is, you know, one of the most severe, you know, averot that we have. And for that reason, we're extra, extra careful when it comes to it. So, I'd like to discuss, you know, we'll go in chronological order. You know, we'll start all the way from the days leading up to Pesach, in which we are in right now, and then we'll see where the night takes us. If you think your question could wait, you know, until the end, then great. That way we could cover more ground, and then maybe we'll have some time at the end for a Q&A. But if you can't wait, or you're going to forget it, and my kid says that all the time. I'm like, hold on, I'm in the middle of teaching or something. I'm going to forget it. If you can forget it, then, you know, that's totally fine. Okay, so the night of the 14th of Nisan, which is the night before Pesach, we have what's called Bedikat Chametz. Bedikat Chametz is where we do a check of the entire home and all of our properties to check for Chametz. Now, it goes without saying that you should not leave everything for that night, okay? You plan on staying at home for Pesach, so it doesn't mean that you should start cleaning for Pesach the night before Pesach because it's called Bedikat Chametz, the night that you're supposed to search for the Chametz. No, that's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense because there's no way that you could conquer the entire home in one night. There's no way you could do that. So for that reason, the days leading up to Pesach, wherever you are, I assume you all are going home, yeah? So you won't have too many days of being home before Pesach because of the semester and how it and the layout. But the days that you do show up at home, that's it. Get on your knees and start scrubbing, you know, and start helping out. Not only that, right? So that's something to keep in mind. The places that you're not going to be staying at on Pesach, technically speaking, do not need any bedikah. Do not need you to check for chametz leading up to it. And the reason is because you're not going to be there. So what do you do instead? There's what's called mechirat chametz, the sale of chametz. I spoke to Rabbi Bernstein already, and he said that he has, you know, a Google Doc that's already in place for all of you, that you're able to sell your chametz to a goy. That way it will not be owned by you. You're not allowed to own your chametz. So anything that you have in your dorm rooms, in your apartments, you know, you're not allowed to own on Pesach. You're not allowed to own chametz. So for that reason, if you're going to be staying in your dorms, which you're probably not, or your apartments probably not, you know, then you would have to do an actual bedikat chametz and clear up the entire home of chametz. But if you're not going to be there, which is probably the case, so then you have to do what's called mechirat chametz and selling the chametz. And you could speak to Ari Bernstein. I spoke to him already, and he says he has something in place for anyone who would like to do that. You don't have to do it with him. You're going back home. Your parents do it. Your father does it with the local shul rabbi. You know, you could do it with him as well. Whatever properties that you own or are renting, places that chametz might be at, so that should be included in the sale. But in terms of the bidika, so the night before Pesach, there's a mitzvah, midrabanan, to search for chametz in your entire home and all of your properties that you might be at during Pesach. So that includes your car, okay? If you have a car back home, your parents have a car, that needs to be checked, right? So that is, you know, your home, your rooms, even outside, even your backyard, your front yard. You need to do bedikat chametz. What's the difference? It's your property, and you might be hanging out in your backyard on Pesach. So why is that any different than your bedroom? So that's that. Don't rely on the cleaning lady. Okay? Don't rely on the cleaning lady. And if you're going to be at a hotel, don't rely on room service. There was one Pesach that I was in a ski resort just, I think, north of Montreal. Anyone here from Montreal? Okay? Canada? No? Yeah, where? Toronto? Okay, beautiful. So I was in next to Montreal. There's a ski resort in Mont-Tremblant. Heard of it? Yeah?
I was born in Montreal.
You're born in Montreal? Oh, beautiful. So, you know, the Montreal people and Frenchies called Mont-Tremblant. Did I pronounce it correctly? All right, so we stayed there. And, you know, it's a nice ski resort. And there's a Pesach program that goes on there. Beautiful. So we got there. And I said, you know, it was like the first year I was married, I remember. And I said, all right, we got to do Bidgat Chametz. We got to search for Chametz. My wife is like, what do you mean? It's a hotel room. We get it clean. And I said, but we still have to do Bidgat Chametz. And I searched everywhere. And behind the TV stand, I found like a bunch of popcorn kernels. Now, it's not actual Chametz popcorn. You're not allowed to eat it. We don't eat corn, right? But it's not... But yeah, again, depending on you know, depends on who, right? But it's not actual chametz. But the same way popcorn was left there, and who knows for how long, and the room service ladies missed it, right? So crackers could have been there too. Who knows? You know. So don't rely on the cleaning. The severity, there is no. It's not severe to them. So why would they? Why would they go above and beyond to make sure that there's no chametz? They don't have an isur of owning chametz on Pesach. So why would they? Right? It's more severe to us. It means more to us. And for that reason, you should not rely on them. They should definitely help you out and do a nice deep clean for you beforehand if you have that luxury of having a cleaning lady or a nanny or anything like that. But afterwards, it's on you. It's on you. So that is that. How to do the Birkat Chametz? You should have a candle with one wick, not with more than one wick. And the reason is because a candle that has more than one wick is what's called a torch in halacha, and the fire is greater. Why? So why is that a problem? If anything, it creates more light. Anyone know why that might be a problem? To have a bigger flame? Safety, right? Exactly. But more than that, right? Since you're worried about safety, you might come to not check as well. Right? Let's say you have an under your bed, for example. Okay? So you're not going to bring the fire so close because of safety. And therefore, you're not going to check as well. The checking is not going to be with as high quality as it needs to be. So for that reason, one wick. Right? That way, the flame is just small enough that it's, you know, somewhat safe, but big enough that it could create light. There are different opinions about flashlights. Chaim Ovadia Yosef says, flashlights are totally fine. It accomplishes what you need it to accomplish, and that is to help you search for chametz. So it's ideally one should have a candle, but in the places where you're scared, you know, for safety reasons, it's not so smart and safe to bring a candle that close, you know, next behind curtains or under your bed or anywhere like that, places that are very flammable and could catch fire very quickly, use a flashlight. We all have flashlights on our phone. That's not a problem at all. As we spoke, you know, already your car needs to be checked for Bidgat Chametz, so that means car wash, okay? I have kids, and my kids eat in the car, and my car, before Pesach, is filthy. It's crazy, crazy dirty, but before Pesach, and I don't leave that for the car wash. I take it to the car wash, and they do vacuuming and scrubbing and all that stuff, but afterwards I find so much more on my own. Once again, because it's not severe for them, it's severe for me. So therefore, I'm going to go above and beyond. But you need to check your car. It's not smart to bring a flame into your car. Use a flashlight. The big myth is that the lights need to be off when you're doing Bidgat Chametz. That's like classic, you know, growing up, shut off all the lights, you know. It's not true. Shutting off the lights creates more darkness. It doesn't create more light. So why would that help you? In what way does that help you? It just makes it more spooky, more of an experience. But you could leave all the lights on. That's totally fine. Use a flashlight in areas where it might get dark. There's a bracha that you make before. Okay, al biur chametz. You make that bracha before you start checking. When do you have that obligation to start checking? Tzedek Chavim, nightfall, which is roughly wherever you are. I see, you know, you guys are from many different places. Roughly 25 minutes after sunset. Sunset, just take out your phone. In the weather app, if you have an iPhone, or just check, a very, very good app to have is what's called My Zmanim. Okay, if you don't have that app, you should download it. My Zmanim, you type in your, you know, you don't have to type anything in. It just, it tells you all the Zmanim, all the times, based on your actual location, right? So it'll tell you when sunset is. Sunset is, you know, when the sun sets. So right now, the sunset is probably around 7:15 or so. So for Sfaradim, roughly 25 minutes after sunset is what's called Tzedek HaChachamim, nightfall. For Ashkenazim, it's a little later. That's why on fast days we're always happy, because our fast ends, you know, probably 25 minutes before their fast ends. But for Birkat Chametz also, so the earliest that one can do the mitzvah of searching is roughly 25 minutes after nightfall. Why am I telling you when the time is? Just do it, you know, any time of the night? No, do it as soon as you can. The second you have the mitzvah on you, that's when you should do it. Mitzvah bali yadcha al tachmitzena. You should not delay mitzvot. The first opportunity you have to do it, do it. And not only that, you should also not be involved in like a full meal with bread, or get involved with something that will overconsume you, because you might come to forget to do the bedikat chametz. Now, if there's someone in the home that's appointed to do it, right, that's fine. Then you can do whatever you want. It's important to be involved in the mitzvah, but if your father is the one who does it, your brother is the one who does it, whoever it is, that's great. Help out, be involved, but once again, it's not, you know, it's not on you. The responsibility is not on you to do. If they're not going to do it, right, the many, many homes that parents are not religious and may not do it as well, so that, there you go. That's where you need to step in. You need to step to the plate. That's where Yeshiva University education is going to come into play. So that's that. There is a minhag to put out 10 pieces of bread. Okay? Now, about this minhag. It's not a halakha. If you don't have bread, it's okay. You're still yotzei the mitzvah. There's no obligation to put out bread and then find bread. There's an obligation to search for bread. So if you don't have bread to put out, that's fine. As long as you're searching for bread or searching for chametz, that's totally fine. But there is a minhag, according to the Arizal, according to Kabbalah, to do that. Now, just a few things about that. It's not so smart to take a bread that is very crummy, that has a lot of crumbs, okay? Like, let's say, like an old water challah roll or a cracker, okay? That's not so smart. Why is that not so smart? Because you don't want crumbs of bread and chametz, you know, all over the place. So something like a pita or a wrap that is soft and doesn't give off a lot of crumbs, to wrap it up, that would probably be the best thing to do. It's very important to know where you hide those pieces. Okay? Write it down. Don't assume that you're smart and you're going to remember everything. This is not a stats exam over here. All right? Write it down. Don't play any games. It's just not worth it. Write it down on your phone exactly. Take a picture of each and every spot that you hide it. Okay? The point is not to hide it in a way that the person searching it's impossible for them to find it. That's not the point over here. The point is to motivate them to search in every area. But you should know where they are, because you don't want to lose one of those pieces. That's not going to be good. Accompanied with the bidikat chametz is what's called bitul chametz. Bitul chametz is where you nullify it and make it what's called hefker, ownerless. Okay, you say, whatever chametz that I found, great. Whatever chametz that I did not find should be ownerless, and it's not part of my property anymore. You're going to repeat that again the following morning when you burn the actual chametz. It's all in the machzor for Pesach. If you need the actual text, you know, I'll text it to you. Get it? If you need the actual text, I could help you with that. Let me know. Okay. But you need to, on that text, it's important that you understand what you're saying. It's not like Tehillim, you can just read it. It's important to understand what you're saying, that I am hereby making all the chametz that I find ownerless. Okay, that's important. You need to, if you read it in English, it's just as good. Right? It's in Aramaic, right? Most of you probably don't know Aramaic, but, you know, read it in English if you need to. Read in Aramaic and then in English, or in Hebrew. Whatever it is, just understand what you're saying. Now, which areas do you need to search for chametz? Do you need to do bdikat chametz for? Which areas do you not need to? So any area that it's possible that chametz may have entered inside there, those are the areas you need to check. Any areas that you know as a fact chametz has not entered inside there, there's no obligation to check. So in a home like I have, where I have kids, every area in the home, okay, it's possible that chametz entered there. Okay, but if you're, you know, you're a Saba and Safta's home, where it's you could hear a pin drop, and you could even see the pin that drops because the house is so clean, and nothing is ever out of place over there. So if you know that under the couch, you know, is a place that it's impossible. Chametz never felt, they never eat in the living room, ever. Right? In the past 5 years, no food has ever entered the living room. So under the couch, you don't need to check. Under the bed, you don't need to check. So again, it's better to do it anyways, but halachically speaking, you don't need to go crazy in those areas. Speaking about your, so again, the same would apply to your car, to your office. If you have an office, one of your parents have an office, if they plan on entering that office or that car on Pesach, so the same way you would do bidikat chametz in your own home, with you know all the intensity and all you know and all the stringencies that are attached to it, on the same level you would have to go and search in those areas. What about an area that you don't plan on going into? For example, like we said, your dorm room, your apartment. So you're not required to do bidikat chametz there. Not required to, as long as it's sold, as long as you're able to sell it, that should be okay. All right, the following morning you have what's called biur chametz, burning the chametz, so you must burn the actual chametz that you right that you find. Another big myth is that you have to bring, you know, go to the bakery and buy out all the challahs that they have, and all the pitas that they have, and all the lafas that they have, and bring it to biur chametz. Wow, it's beautiful, right? It's a throw in. No, you don't need to do that. Don't go out of your way to buy chametz in order to burn it. Whatever you have, burn. If you don't have anything, or you have a small little piece of bread, or the 10 pieces from the night before, and that's all you have, great. So do that. You don't need to burn. You know, find more things to burn. That's totally fine. In terms of burning it, just you know, make sure you don't. It's not wrapped in plastic, anything plastic, saran wrap, or anything like that, because it's toxic. It's not so healthy to inhale that. If it's wrapped in tin foil, which is a smart thing to do when you're putting them out to hide, unwrap it with a tin foil. Why? Who knows why? It won't burn. Very good. It's not going to accomplish what you need it to accomplish. So take it out of the tin foil. What many people do is that they wrap it in like a paper towel or a napkin, and then on top of that they wrap it in tin foil, and then when they come to burn it, they take out the tin foil and then put the napkin inside. Wrap it really well so the crumbs don't go everywhere. That's important to know. So again, we're going through the timeline. We're in Pesach morning, so it's important to keep in mind what the last time. There are two times that you need to keep in mind for the day of Pesach, the morning of Pesach. One time is the Sof Zman, the end, the last, latest time that you could burn your chametz. Okay, that's one time to keep in mind. And the other time is the latest time that you're able to eat chametz or drink chametz. Okay, those times differ depending on where you live. Ask your local rabbi and he'll tell you those times. You know, once again, if you have any trouble with that, you could ask any of the rabbeim here. And they'll give you those times. Before that time, that last time that you're able to eat chametz, brush your teeth and take the toothbrush, you know, hide it, put it somewhere else. You should have new toothbrushes for Pesach. Okay, so brush your teeth, get all the chametz out of your system. Take the garbage out. If there's any chametz in the trash, take it out. And you know, if you need to put it in your front lawn, you know, so in the more religious area, the more Jewish areas, so the sanitation department, they know already to come around the morning of Pesach. Right? I grew up in Queens in Kew Garden Hills, and Baruch Hashem, a lot of Jews there. So they knew already, Pesach morning, they made a bunch of rounds. The sanitation department, the garbage trucks, they came and they collected all the... Why? So that we shouldn't have any garbage in our possession, any chametz that might be in there. And you probably live in areas that might happen, might not happen. So the best thing to do is to put it in a public trash can, if you're able to. If not, put it in your trash can and say it's ownerless. You know, I'm not owning it. But the best thing is that you should not have any chametz in your trash can come Pesach morning. Right? You get rid of everything ahead of time already. If you're staying at home and you have chametz in your home and you don't want to get rid of everything, you could sell it as long as it's in some sort of room or closet marked off. This is chametz, you know, do not enter, off limits. Put some tape over it, wrap the handles around. You're not allowed to see it. Okay, you're not allowed to see it. That is, how you should go about it. In terms of food items, what's kasher lePesach, what's not kasher lePesach, try to make sure that anything you buy or your family buys has some sort of hechsher on it. OUP, star K, P. Kosher for Passover, but like a legitimate kosher certification, not the no-name ones, not the shady ones. There's some items that are okay even without a hechsher on it. For example, like toothpastes and mouthwashes and stuff like that. It's important to have a list. If you could search online, you could find OU has a kosher for Passover list, Star K, CRC. Search online for those, you'll find it, and go through their guidelines. That's totally fine. It's not so smart to go and just buy things without a hechsher on Pesach, although some might be okay, some might not be okay, but you wouldn't know because you don't know the ingredients. Sometimes you look in the ingredients, oh, there's no wheat in here, so it must be okay. That's similar to going to a restaurant, a non-kosher restaurant, and ordering fish. It's just fish. I know it's salmon. I know it's kosher, but there's so many other things that could go wrong. There's so many ingredients and on that list of ingredients that you can't even pronounce that might have chametz inside of it, right? You don't even know what those ingredients are. So it's not so smart, not so wise to make those calls, especially on Pesach. Okay. Leading into Pesach, so you want it, you're at home. Let's with a raise of hands, how many of you plan on being home for Pesach? Okay, the ones that are not going to be home, where are you plan on being?
No,
Pesach program. Okay, both of you. Where, which ones?
Florida.
Florida, nice. With every other Jew in the world, yeah. And you?
Brazil.
Oh, cool. You're from there?
From Chile.
Oh, so the Pesach program in Brazil. Very nice. Okay, so when it comes to that, so you guys have it easy. Why do you have it easy? You have it easy for many reasons. One reason is because you don't have to worry about kasher lePesach dishes and kasher lePesach utensils and kasher lePesach ovens and kasher lePesach pots and pans and things like that. Why? Because the hotel is taking care of everything for you. They're cooking everything. They're preparing everything for you. But the ones that are going to be staying at home, so there are two ways to go about it. Either everything you're going to use on Pesach is going to be brand new or saved from Pesach of the year before. Okay, that's one way to go about it. That's probably the easier way to go about it, right? That way you don't have to worry about, how to kosher it. Or you could, some of the utensils that you use during the year, you're able to kosher, you're able to make it kasher lePesach, okay? And there are multiple ways of doing that. So first of all, before you even do that, many people buy new utensils, new dishes for Pesach, right? You might buy new glasses, new flatware, new plates, new pots, new pans, right? So the first thing you need to know is if you buy anything from a goy, there's a halacha, pasuk in the Torah, that is what's called tevilat kelim. You must immerse the dishes in the mikveh. Okay, that's any time you acquire anything made out of glass or metal from a goy, assuming it's brand new, you would have to, and it's a food, an item used for food, right? You take if you're a barber and you want to buy a scissors to cut someone's hair, oh, it's metal, yeah, but it's not used for food, right? Let's say you have a spatula that's made out of plastic or made out of wood, and it's used for food, but it's not metal and not glass, so you also don't need to. It has to be metal or glass and used for food. So those things need to be taken to mikveh with a bracha, to be immersed. Last year, 2 years ago, right, the COVID year, things were a bit complicated. Why were they a bit complicated? Because many of the mikvahs were closed, okay? We didn't want COVID to spread in the mikvahs. It was a serious thing. So then we had to figure out creative ways of how to acquire new kelim and it still be okay, even though you're acquiring it from a goy. Baruch Hashem, nowadays I'm sure everyone here has access to a kelim mikveh and can take it there. So that's something that you need to do when you buy a new item. Now, if it's an item that you want to use once again and use it throughout the year, it's not kasher lePesach, and you want to kasher it, make it kasher lePesach. So there's a rule brought down in Torah. It's called kebol'o kachbolto. The same way that it absorbed chametz, that's how you get the chametz out of it. Okay. For example, if let's say you have forks and knives, right? So how did they absorb chametz? Through a liquid, right? You're eating food with hot liquid, a soup, let's say, right? Or let's say there's a pot or a spoon that you put into a pot and there was chametz inside of it. So it absorbed it through liquid, it absorbed it through heat in that way. So the way to kasher it is to do what's called hagalah. Hagalah is, you have a boiling hot pot, boiling water, and to place those spoons, forks, knives, whatever it is, inside of it. Okay? So that's what's called hagalah. So that is something that you can do with flatware and things like that. One thing that you cannot kasher, right, is china. Okay, china, ceramic, earthenware, things like that, you cannot kasher. So you put that away. Should not be used on Pesach. When it comes to glass Sephardim are much more lenient when it comes to glass. Anyone here Ashkenaz? Yeah? Okay. So for Ashkenazim, glass is much more complicated. Speak to your local Ashkenazic rabbi. That's not me. And ask how to kasher glass, if it's even possible. Some hold that it's not possible, and some hold that it is possible. But for Sephardim, at least, glass, the Shulchan Aruch says, does not absorb anything. Okay? Does not absorb anything. Since it doesn't absorb anything, so therefore you would not be required to kasher it. So, for example, you have glass cups, technically speaking. Last year, my family went to we rented a house in Orlando. Right, that's where you're going, Orlando too. Orlando, in a hotel.
No, house program.
A house program, which community?
Story Lake.
Okay, cool. We were in Champions Gate.
Right.
Yeah. I love it. New Yorkers know Florida by heart. It's like they almost live there already. Right. So over there, right, the house that we rent, you open up the cabinets and there are glasses, there are cups that you could use. They're made out of glass. Technically speaking, wipe it down clean, and you can use it on Pesach because it's made out of glass. Again, for Sephardim, Ashkenazim might be more complicated. So glass would not require tevila. Again, it's always better to be more strict and to have separate ones, right? Just to create boundaries. But technically speaking, when it comes to glass, that's totally fine. And the same applies to different types of glass, right? There's Pyrex, Duralex, different types of glass. Like they're thick glass materials that you're even able to put in the oven, right? So the same would apply for that as well. When it comes to ovens, so here's where things might get a little tricky. Some hold, no, you got to close up the oven, can't use the oven. The truth is, you could use the oven. If you have self-clean in your oven, amazing. You're lucky, okay? And it's with one push of the button, your oven will be kasher l'Pesach. You close the oven, lock it up, press self-clean, 5-6 hours later, however long it takes, it goes to a temperature that is very, very, very high, and it would burn into ashes anything, any residue, any grease, anything that's in there, it would burn into ashes. And therefore, that would make it kasher l'Pesach. If your oven does not have self-clean, so then things might get a little more tricky. What you probably need to do is to first wipe down the entire oven clean of anything with, you know, scrubbing with the detergent or anything like that. And then you put the oven on high, on the highest possible temperature. I think it's like 550 or something like that. You put it on there for about an hour, and then that should be okay. What about the stovetops? The stovetops, there are a few different things in stovetops. You have like a gas stovetop with the grates, right? And then that piece in the middle, the circle piece, right? So those things, if you have self-clean oven, take it, place it in your oven, and the self-clean should take care of it, okay? If you don't have self-clean in your oven, then what you can do is hagala. Hagala, again, we spoke about before, is that pot that you heat up boiling hot, dip it inside, make sure they're clean, wipe it down clean, make sure there's no residue and nothing on it, dip it inside, take it out, and wash it off with cold water. Toaster ovens are a no-no. You cannot kosher toaster ovens. Those are the small ovens, you know, you probably put pizza bagels inside or, you know, whatever it is. On Pesach, you always make matzah pizza. It's like the famous classic, right? So those things, if it's not kasher l'Pesach, forget about it. Don't even try. You know, that's not that. Grills, if you have a barbecue grill, you want to kasher it for Pesach, it's not recommended. There's too much, you know, too many things could go wrong. It's not recommended to do that. You could buy for $50 and go buy a grill that you use for, you know, 3 or 4 times, and then just throw it in the garbage. You know, you don't need it for the next 5 years of your life. You need it for the next, not even 8 days, just Chol HaMoed, it's 3 or 4 days, you know? So it's not, that's not a problem. When it comes to, again, the stovetop, so what about the surface area, all right? So it's best to just cover it, Okay, but if you know, what you should do is to do what's called irui. Irui means to pour boiling hot water. So you need to boil water, right? To heat up water to a boil. You can do that in a hot water, you know, the hot water kettle. Once it's boiling, at that moment in time, you pour it directly. It should contact the surface area directly with the water, with the stream of water. Not that it should hit the stovetop and then splash onto another area. It doesn't count. It has to directly hit. So you might have to do it a few times. And that should take care of the stovetop. That should take care of all the counters. If you have counters, whether it's granite, whether it's any other type of quartz or any other type of countertop, irui, pouring of boiling hot water, should help. That should work for the sinks as well. You should kosher your sinks. Again, pouring, it shouldn't, you know, what they say is you should start from the bottom, the very bottom of your sink, right? Start from the bottom and go around in a circle, and then start going, you know, further and further away, and then you know, start going up on the walls. That's the best way to do it. Why? Because if you start from the top of the walls, then it's just going to drip down. That doesn't count if it drips down. It has to directly come in contact with the material that you're trying to kosher. We spoke about flatware, spoke about glass. What about refrigerator? Refrigerator doesn't absorb. Only one, something can only absorb a food item if it's through heat. But there's no heat in the refrigerator. So therefore, nothing is absorbed. No chametz is absorbed in there. All you need to do, it's on the surface. So just wipe it down. That's totally fine. Dishwasher. Some poskim say you cannot kosher it. Some poskim say you could. Technically speaking, if you really, really, really need to, you can just run it on three cycles, one after another, with detergent, and dishwasher could be kasher lePesach, but that's only if you really need to. Microwave is not recommended to kasher for many reasons. We'll try to stay away from the microwave. When it comes to all of the above, and with that we're going to end that section of cleaning your house and kashering your house for Pesach. When it comes to all the above, it's always best, if you're able to be more strict, okay? So if that means covering your countertops, if that means not using your oven, using something else, if that means, you know, covering the stovetops, if that means covering, lining the fridge, you know, with some sort of covering, if that means the cabinets in your home, to wipe them down and cover them with something. So it's always best to do that. If that means covering your sink, right? Some people, they cover, they have this insert, they have an insert, they just place it in their sink. That's fine. Some people just cover the sink with tinfoil, wrap the nozzle with tinfoil. It's always better. It's always better, but just don't drive your family crazy if you don't need to. Right? If it's a stringency and it's going to make people angry, don't do it. If it's a halakha and it's going to make people angry, you got to do it. Halakha is halakha. But a stringency, that already you could try to calculate, you know, if it's going to ruin anyone's Pesach or not. Okay. Any questions on that before we move on to the next topic? Yeah. Go ahead.
Me? Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah. What's the difference between Hagalah and Imoy?
Okay. Hagalah means you have a boiling boiling pot of hot water. It's boiling. It's on the fire and it's currently boiling and continuing to boil. And then you place those items and dip them inside, you let go, and then you take them out. That's Hagalah. And whenever you do Hagalah, you need to rinse it with cold water immediately afterwards, then it's totally fine, kasher lePesach. Irui is when you have, you take, you know, boiling hot water, and you pour it onto the item that you want to kasher. So for example, you know, you're not able to take your entire countertop and place it inside the pot, right, for obvious reasons. So what you do is you pour the boiling hot water on top of it.
Right, and when you say to cover the stoves, do you mean with the tin foil? Is that like the
tin foil works? Right. Anything else would probably not be so smart because it gets very hot. Tin foil is not flammable. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I have two questions. So let's say if I know that the food pantry is clean, like I know for sure that it's clean, should I still say the bracha on the diga?
Okay, so if you know the place that you're going to is clean, what is it, a hotel room or a house that you're renting? Let's say a hotel room.
The person who cleaned the house, my mother, whoever, knows. There's no chametz in the house.
Okay, so So someone, yeah, there's an obligation to do bedikat chametz even if you know the house is clean, and to make the bracha also. Some poskim say you should lay out a few pieces of chametz. That way, your bracha is not gonna ki'ilu be bracha levatala and go to waste. That way, you're gonna end up finding chametz, but you don't even need to do that because the bracha is on the search for chametz. It's not on the actual finding of the chametz. You understand?
And then, let's say my dorm room. If I know that there might be tiny pieces of chametz, but like less than like a gezeit or something, should I sell it? Should we sell?
You should always, chametz? You should always, always, always. If you have property, you should sell your.
It's not my dorm. It's stirring.
I understand, but you're renting it, meaning you're renting it from them. So you should that should definitely include that in your sale. You should definitely include that in your sale. You're not selling your apartment, you're selling any chametz that might be found in your apartment. So therefore you should do that. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to do that, right? If your parents or family members are making a sale, so have that included as well. If not, then just you don't need to pay any money. Just put your name and your address, and just fill out the Google Doc that Ari Bernstein, he told me that he has. Just do it. It won't do anything. It won't hurt you in any way. Yeah.
If my father's doing bedikat chametz, mm-hmm. Do I need to be there?
You don't need to be there. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you capture an electric stovetop?
Okay. Very good question. Electric stovetops might be a bit different, it depends what the top is. If it's glass, it depends what type of glass and how it's the method of heating up. But what the poskim say is that you do what's called irui. You pour the boiling hot water on top of it. Some say to be even more strict and not to put the pots directly on. Even if you're going to do irui, not to put the pots directly on it. There's a way to do it. If you take what are they called? Those metal. You put the screw. It goes inside of it. Twists inside of it. Nuts, I think, or bolts. Nuts or bolts. One of those. I forgot what it's called. If you take those things and put them on the area where it might get hot, and they put the pots on top of it, it's going to heat it up. I've never tried it before, because I rely on the person and say you could just do irui and do that. However, you should try to make sure that whatever food items might fall on the counter on the stovetop, don't eat that. It's better not to eat that. But otherwise it's okay.
Also, it's glass, so like it's not as bad as.
Exactly. But the method of heating is different than a gas, so it might be a little different. Yeah. Yeah.
Does a woman also say bedikat chametz bracha?
If she's the one who is checking, yeah. Women are equally as obligated to search.
Time-bound.
I'm sorry?
It's time bound.
So chametz is also time bound, but you're still not allowed to eat it. Mm-hmm. Right? So yes, you should make a if they're the only ones in the home and no one else is in the home, no one else is doing it, yeah. Okay, let's move on. So we move on to the Seder night. Okay, the Seder night, I'll tell you, this is not a halakha, but I'll just give you some advice. The more time you invest to the Seder night, for the Seder night, the more enjoyable it's going to be. And time invested doesn't mean an hour before Pesach, an hour before, the men go to shul and come back. It means starting from now, starting from 2 weeks ago already. Right? Invest time. Learn the halachot. That's what you're doing right now. Good for you. But open up the Haggadah. Start reading through it. Start understanding it. Start translating it. And being familiar with it. The more you do that, the more you learn insights, the more you listen to shiurim and learn things about the importance of Pesach and what it's all about, the underlying messages of Pesach. The more you do that, the more enjoyable it's going to be for you. Okay? So that's just something I recommend that you do already. It's important to focus on the simple meaning of the Haggadah, okay? Many people are very busy with insights and nice shots and nice commentaries and things like that. That's all amazing, but that's the icing on the cake. You need to eat the actual cake, all right? And the actual cake is understanding what the words mean. especially when it comes to a certain section in the Haggadah, in the Seder, which is Magid, which is the part of the Seder that we are supposed to tell over the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, to understand what the story is, to understand how it all happened, and to understand the literal translation of the words of the Haggadah is very, very important. And you cannot just start to do that while you're at the Seder. Okay, to invest the time beforehand. When it comes to nighttime, the night of Pesach, when all, you know, the men in the home go and pray Arvit, so at the end of Arvit, after Shemana Esrei, after the Amidah, there's what's called Hallel. Okay, Hallel, that, you know, we might say throughout the year, some might say Rosh Chodesh and other holidays, but this Hallel is the only one in the entire year that even women are obligated to say it with a bracha. Okay, with a bracha. It's the full Hallel, the night of Pesach, both nights of Pesach. You're obligated, just like men are, to say Hallel on the first night and second night, assuming you're outside of Israel, of Pesach. So whether you're going to shul, you're not going to shul, take out a machzor, say Hallel with a bracha, the full Hallel, and enjoy it, and have a good time, and maybe sing a little bit, right? It's important to do that. Why? Because you were also taken out of Mitzrayim, not only the men, right? If anything, the women are even more important when it comes to Pesach, because they had major contributions in terms of the men, not not giving up hope. The women are very significant when it comes to Pesach. So if anything, you're more obligated, you're more involved in the miracle, right? And therefore, when it comes to Hallel on Pesach, make it a point to say it on the night of Pesach before the Seder, right? So that is that. The Seder should start at the earliest, at Seder Kochavim, nightfall. Once again, 25 minutes after sunset is a good time to do that. Now, before we get into the actual Seder, how are we doing with time? Okay, we're good. 15 minutes will be okay. When it comes to the Seder, very important to note, before we get into the different steps, the different areas of the Seder, there are certain areas throughout the evening that you're going to lean. Okay, leaning is a must. You should lean. When you drink wine, when you eat matzah, okay? Drinking wine, eating matzah, anytime you're going to do that throughout the Seder, you should lean. How do you lean? You're not leaning in the air, doesn't work. Okay? Leaning back like that, doesn't work. It should be on your left side, and you should be leaning on something. So, if you want to lean on a friend, that's fine. Okay? If you want to, usually if you have a chair with like an elbow rest, and you have a little pillow over there, and you lean on that pillow, that's fine. But what I do is, you know, if I don't have that, I just put my chair sideways. So the back of the chair is really to the side, and I lean like that. That's also something that you can do. But you need to lean usually around a 45-degree angle like that is totally fine. The idea of leaning is to look like kings. Kings, when they eat, they chill. So they're relaxed, they're royal. So you're a king, you're a queen on the night of Pesach, and therefore act like it and eat like it. So when you eat matzah, when you drink wine, you're going to lean. Once again, before we get into the steps, so in terms of the matzah that you should get, it should be shmura matzah. Okay, on the box it should say shmura matzah. That means that it's been watched from the second that the wheat has been harvested. And also, try to make sure that it's handmade matzah. Okay, handmade shmura matzah. All right, if you're going out to the store to get matzah, or if your parents are asking you which one you should get, that's the one that you should get. Shmura matzah that is handmade. If you're not able to get a hold of handmade matzah, try very hard. If you can't, then machine-made shmura matzah, okay? Shmura matzah, machine made. Those are the square ones, right? Assuming it's shmura matzah. It has to be shmura matzah. That's the next best thing, but don't rely on that. Try to get handmade shmura matzah. That's the round one. Those are the round ones, okay? So now let's get into the steps of the Seder. So Kaddish, okay? Kaddish is what's called Kiddush, okay? You're going to say Kiddush. It's better to have Kiddush on wine. This is the first of the four cups. Better to have it on wine. If wine is not good for you, if you really don't like wine, if you're afraid it's going to put you to sleep, if you're a recovering alcoholic, wine is not a good idea. Grape juice is just as fine. Okay? Just as okay. You could use grape juice. Ideally, it should be red, whether the wine or the grape juice should be red, ideally. But even if you don't have any red, you're yotza the mitzvah with white, but ideally it should be red. How much do you need to drink? 3 ounces. Okay? It's not a lot. 3 ounces is, I don't know, I don't have a cup to show you, but it's really, really not a lot. Maybe before Pesach, you should, you know, have some sort of measuring cup for reference, just so you could have a basic idea of how much it is. It's really, really, really not a lot. It's probably like, if you go by like shot glasses, it's probably like 3 shot glasses. Okay? Not that you guys know anything about shot glasses, but it's probably around 3 shot glasses. I don't know, maybe more than that. But that's how much. 3 ounces. Okay? And once again, you're going to drink that cup. Have in mind, whoever is making the kiddush for Kadesh, they should have in mind to cover everyone else's obligation to make Kiddush, the bracha of Kiddush, the bracha on Bar Pia Geffen, the bracha of Shechianu, that you're going to make a Kiddush, answer Amen. And then after he makes that those brachot, you're going to drink your cup, it should be poured ahead of time, and you're going to lean while you drink. The next part of the Seder is Urchatz. Urchatz means you're going to wash your hands. But without a bracha. You're not going to make a bracha. And the reason why you wash your hands over here is because of the next part of the Seder, which is karpas. Karpas is where you take different opinions, but most people take celery, and they dip it in salt water. So why do you wash your hands? Because anytime you dip anything into one of these 7 liquids, okay, water being one of them, you need to wash your hands without a bracha. That's the halacha. Another example, and I'm not going to go into it now, it's not the time and place, but if you want to, milk is another one of those liquids. If you want to dip cookies in milk, okay, you got to wash your hands without a bracha. Just like you wash for hamotzi, 3, 3, and 3, or Ashkenazim, 2, and 2. So you would wash without a bracha. That's what you would do. So too over here, the celery that you're dipping into salt water, that's what you should do. Some people use lemon juice to dip the celery in lemon juice. Better not to do that. Better to do it in salt water, because the whole purpose is washing your hands because you're about to dip something in one of the 7 liquids. Lemon juice is not one of the 7 liquids. You could use lemon juice and dilute it with a lot of water, making it a majority of water. That's okay, because then it's considered water, right? But otherwise, salt water is the custom. In terms of the celery, it's better to use the stalks and not the leaves, because the leaves have bug issues. So therefore, to use the stalks, which do not have bug issues, they should be rinsed and washed very well beforehand anyways. That's karpas. Yachatz is where you break that middle matzah. Again, you should have 3 matzot. Take the middle one out, break it in half. According to Kabbalah, the bigger half should be in the shape of a vav. Now let's picture this for a second, okay? The bigger half should be in the shape of a vav. The smaller half in the shape of a dalet. Try doing that. It's nearly impossible. Take a circle and try to take a bigger half and make it into a vav, and the smaller half into a dalet. It's very, very difficult. Regardless, the bigger half should be saved for the afikoman. That's the time and place that you hide the afikoman. Over here at Yachatz, when you break them up, the bigger half should be taken somewhere for the afikoman. And the smaller piece you're going to place back in between the 2 matzot. That should be placed again in the middle. And then afterwards, you have literally the main event of the entire night of Pesach, Magid. Magid is where we tell over the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So technically speaking, the father has to tell over the story to the child, okay? Sometimes the father doesn't really know what's going on. And when he reads through Magid, he reads it like it's Tehillim. The Haggadah is not Tehillim. It's not just reading a book. It's understanding what you're reading. If you need an English translation or a Spanish translation, get it, because that's the whole point of the night. It's not just about reading it, it's about understanding it, what's going on. You don't publicize the miracle of Pesach by just reading it. You publicize it by telling it over and understanding what you're saying and what you're reading. So for that reason, the more you talk about it, the more you discuss it, the more you try to publicize how unbelievable some of the miracles were, and try to read a little bit. There's a book that I highly, highly recommend everyone get and read before Pesach. It's called Let My Nation Go. I'm sure some of you have heard of it. I'm not sure. But it basically, this person took all of the stories and all of the midrashim and all of the gemaras and everything that has to do with Yitziyat Mitzrayim, that has to do with the Bnei Yisrael being enslaved in Mitzrayim, and then them getting redeemed from Mitzrayim, and he writes it over in a story form, which is, it's so unbelievably entertaining, and I'm not a reader. I hate reading. I love reading it. Every single Pesach, before Pesach, I start reading it already. It's so easy to read. It's unbelievable, and you get to see the whole picture in detail of what happened. It's like watching a movie. Mamash, watching a movie, but in a book. It's really, really good. Let My Nation Go, it's called. There was one on Pesach, it's called, I think, Let My Nation, on Purim, I'm sorry. That's called, I think it's called Let My Nation Live. It's also amazing. I read it also every year. It's also amazing, but we're not there anymore. We're at Pesach, so I highly recommend reading that book. So again, to understand what's going on. After that, don't try to rush through it. This is the main event of the night. So it's important to take your time. After that is what's called rachza. You wash your hands, this time with a bracha. Wash it 3 and 3, because you're about to eat bread. Not actual bread, but matzah. Which leads us to motzi matzah. What's going to happen in motzi matzah is you have 3 matzahs. Okay? Remember, the top and the bottom are whole. The middle one is that small dalid that your father tried to break. Again, some customs are to do that. Some customs are just to break it in half, and whatever happens, happens. Regardless, you have 3. And the one in the middle is broken. So you're going to make 1 bracha, which is Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. Then you're going to drop the 3rd one. And then you're going to say Al achilat matzah, which is the bracha that you make on eating matzah. There's only 2 times that you make that bracha, which are if you're outside of Israel. And those 2 times are the first night of Pesach and the 2nd night of Pesach. If you're in Israel, it's only 1 time, only the 1st night, because you don't have 2 days of Yom Tov. You only have 1 day. Those are the only times you'd make that bracha. The following morning, when you eat lunch, on Pesach day, you would not make the bracha, right? Only at nighttime. So you do that, and should break off, the person making the bracha should break off a piece of the top and break off a piece of the middle and give that to everyone around the table. That's not all you need to eat. You need to eat what's called a kezayit. Okay? How much is a kezayit? It depends on the type of matzah you have. But let's assume it's that regular circle shmura matzah. It's probably about between a half and 3/4 of the matzah. Okay? A half and 3/4 of that matzah is how much you should eat. And once again, don't forget to lean when you are eating that matzah. Okay, after that we come to maror. Maror is, most people use lettuce, romaine lettuce. It's one of those items that are known to be infested with bugs. Okay, so don't leave that up to your parents if they don't know the halachot or don't care about the halachot. That should be something that, you know, if you're able to, you have the ability to check on your own before Pesach. Should not wait until the night of Pesach. Before Pesach, leading up to Pesach, it's important to look through it. How to check lettuce. It's not so difficult to check for it, but just know that there are a lot of bugs in lettuce. You break off the stalks of the romaine lettuce. You should drown them in a bowl with soap. Okay, you could use soap, don't worry. You wash off the soap and you don't taste it, I promise. I do it all the time. And they do it in the restaurants that you go to also. So don't get so scared. And you basically, not so much soap, you shouldn't empty out the entire bottle. A few squirts of soap in a big bowl with cold water. You let it sit in there, and what that accomplishes, it would kill all the bugs that might be there. And you agitate it, and then put it under a strong stream of water. And then once again, then you should check every single leaf individually, preferably under a light box. They have what's called a light box, where it's like a box with a light. That's exactly why it's called light box. But it's a very strong white light. You place it, it's like an x-ray. You place the piece of lettuce on top of it, and you're able to see through everything. And if there's anything that's of darker complexion, it's very possible that it's a bug, in which you just have to check it again. That's totally fine. But that's very, very important. If you want to try to limit the amount of bugs that, you know, there might be, to eat the stalk instead of the leaf, right? They usually hang out on the leaves, right? So to eat the stalk would be probably a better idea. But again, you don't need to do that. You can just check them, and that's okay. Once again, I say this, that it's important, any halakha that you might keep, that you know any family member might not keep, it's important to do so in the nicest and most polite way possible. The last thing you need over here is for a parent or a sibling to say, oh, they learned in yeshiva, now they're telling us what to do. They think they're more religious than us. We've been doing this for years. Is that we've been doing it for all of a sudden, what? You learned from some rabbi? It's important to come, you know, to approach the situation in a nice way, in a kind way, you know, with love, as it says in the Pasuk, Derachea Darchei Noam, V'chol Nitivoteav Shalom. The ways of the Torah are pleasant, and all its ways are made are peace, are peaceful, right? You should not be coming with aggression in any way. So you're going to take the maror, you're going to dip it in charoset, okay? And dip it in charoset. Once again, another misconception is you scoop out a big, you know, chunk of charoset and spread it over your piece of lettuce. That's not what you should do. It's supposed to be dipped in the charoset, okay? That is that. The next stage is what's called korech. That's the sandwich, the matzah sandwich. And that's when you take the third matzah. Remember, there was three. You used the first two. Now you're going to use the third one. That's what's used for korech. You're going to break off a piece of that and the lettuce. And once again, you need a kazayit of matzah once again. And kazayit of lettuce. That's probably like, you know, one big stalk, or maybe one and a half big stalks of lettuce. And then you, once again, dip it in the charoset and eat it. When it comes to maror, you're not supposed to lean, because maror does not resemble royalty, does not resemble freedom, it resembles slavery and bitterness. And we're not supposed to lean when you're doing that, because we're supposed to remind ourselves of how the Mitzrim, the Egyptians, embittered our lives. But when it comes to korech, you should lean when it comes to that. After that, you have, for many people, their favorite part of the Seder, which is called Shulchan Orech. That's when all the food comes out. So it's a very, very big problem, because, you know, every mother in the world spends so much time cooking for the first night of Pesach. We're all so excited, so anxious. But it's really not the night to stuff food in your mouths. That's not the time and place. And the reason is because what comes after Shulchan Aruch, which is Safun. Safun is when you eat the Afikoman. Eating the Afikoman, you need to eat with appetite. Halachically speaking, if you are not hungry and you don't have any appetite whatsoever, and you cannot down another bite of matzah at all, you're not yotze the mitzvah. You're not yotze the mitzvah. You need to have appetite. You don't need to be starving. You need to have some sort of appetite in order to eat the afikoman, in order to eat safun, which is another kesayit of matzah that you have to eat. So for that reason, it's important, you know, tell your parents or mother or whoever it is that's cooking, you know, don't go crazy the first night. It's okay. You know, anyways, people aren't going to eat so much. Save all the food for tomorrow. Right? Tomorrow, go crazy. If you can communicate that in the nicest way possible, that's the best. And if not, if they won't listen to you, which is very likely they won't, try very hard to save some space for the afikoman. Once again, afikoman, you're going to eat kazayit, and to try to lean when you do that. After tzafun comes barech. Barech is birkat amazon. In birkat amazon, just to make sure to have the proper additions inside of birkat amazon, which is yalev yavo, chag amatzot hazeh, inside of birkat hamazon. After that is halel, where you actually say halel once again a second time. And then nirtza is chad gadya and echad miyodea and all of those things as well. There's a nice minhag that exists to say shira shirim afterwards as well. And it's brought down the Sifri Halacha that on the night of Pesach, after the Seder, one should be talking about the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim until he falls asleep. It takes you the whole night until you fall asleep. That's it. Until you fall asleep the entire night. This is the night. This is the night to go all out. To go all out doesn't mean you should stay up all night. It just means that until you fall asleep, to try to spend the night talking and publicizing and discussing the miracles that happened, that took place in Mitzrayim and coming out of Mitzrayim. It's very, very important to do that, not to waste the night. According to Kabbalah, according to the Arizal, and all the Sifrei Chassidut, the spiritual lights that come down to a person on the night of Pesach are unparalleled. There is no other night in the year that is as powerful as the night of Pesach, in which we are closest to Hashem more than any other time of the year. And therefore, the levels that you're able to reach on the night of Pesach are a tremendous opportunity. One should not let it go to waste. You know, it's not the time to take out a board game after the Seder and just play. It's not the time to play cards. It's not the time to chit-chat and you know, have a cup of coffee. It's a time to talk about, to learn. It's a time to discuss. It's a time to elevate yourself. It's a time to inspire yourself and the like. With that we conclude the halachot of Pesach. Open to any questions, and with that we're going to end. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question.
Sure.
So just to clarify, are women supposed to do halal twice?
Yes, you're required to say it at Arvit. You don't need to pray Arvit, but you're required to say Halil with a bracha on the night of Pesach.
On the first night?
Meaning if you're outside of Israel, yeah, both nights. The second night is identical to the first night, if you're outside of Israel, for everything. And then once again, in the Haggadah, during Hallel, you're supposed to recite it. Yeah.
Okay, so then I think you answered my second question, which is...
Great.
Shechiyano on the first cup of wine, we do only the first night or both nights?
Both nights. Identical. Yeah.
Three questions. One, what's the vote?
It's a Kabbalistic concept. I'm not a Kabbalist. I don't know.
Two, you said that we need to take like three shot glasses, like that's straight
out. I'm estimating. But, don't quote me on that.
But like, do we need rum coasts? Is that a thing?
It's right.
Right,
right, right, right. So there are different opinions when it comes to that. What I told you is the halacha. The halacha is that all you need is 3 ounces. There are other opinions out there that say whatever the size of the cup is, that's how much you need to drink. Other opinions say, whatever the size of the cup is, you need to drink most of the cup. Okay? Halakhically speaking, right? All you need is 3 ounces. If you could find a cup that is 3 ounces exactly, or 3.3 ounces, or 3.5 ounces, right? And you drink that entire cup, so you fulfill all the opinions. That's great. Try to do that. However, all you need to drink is 3 ounces. Yes, so the Seder should be finished by Chatzot. Okay, so Chatzot, once again, it differs depending on where you live. All right, so check that out. Ideally, it should be finished at that time. It's very late, so, you know, yeah.
Are there any recommended works or books that you feel like we should read to inspire discussion or like commentary that we should read?
There are so many out there. Too many for me to give you any recommendations, honestly. There is one, maybe I'll give you this. There is one that might not have insights and stuff like that, but might have a very nice translation and will, you know, assist you in the step-by-step and the play-by-play. It was actually written, put together by a very good friend of mine, Mordechai Javaheri. I'm sure he was here Shabbaton earlier in the year. So I have the link. It's in Amazon. It's probably like $2.99 on Amazon. It's very, very cheap. I could share that with you afterwards if you want. That's not about insights. That's just about, you know, to help walk you through. But in terms of insights, there are a lot of books out there. You go to any bookstore, they'll have on display, you know, a few tables worth of Haggadot with insights. It just depends on what you can get your hands on at this point. Yeah.
We should finish those, like,
singing,
like, the
Afikoman, yeah.
Also, so I heard that factory made matzah, like, the only, like, the upside to it is that it's less prone to, like, human mistakes. So, like, it's still the idea,
but it has a very big downside, and the very big downside is that in order for you to fulfill your obligation with that matzah, it needs to be baked with what's called lishma. Lishma means with the intention of fulfilling the mitzvah of eating matzah on Pesach. And that could be done, according to many poskim, only by a human being. right? So therefore, when a human being places it, you know, rolls the dough and puts the holes inside, they're always saying, L'shem mitzvat matzah, L'shem mitzvat matzah. You ever go to a matzah factory, that's what you're going to see. And whenever the person places it in the very, very hot oven, he says, L'shem mitzvat matzah, right? So some poskim say, you could accomplish the same thing. When the guy presses the button, you know, for the machine to take the matzah in the oven or whatever it is, you know, you should say, L'shem mitzvah. Some poskim say it does not work. That's why. Yes. No. Charoset, like we said, just to dip inside, you know, to taste it, but not, you don't need a design.
But you're supposed to put inside the sandwich, right? Also.
You could, but that's not, that's not, you know, the purpose, yeah. Right. Very, very good question. Very good question. So, if you're one or two people at the Seder, then maybe you could pull that off. Otherwise, as she's asking a very good question, you know, you have that top matzah and the middle matzah, there's no way to get, you know, everyone on the table a kezayit from that top and middle matzah if you have more than three or four people. So you would supplement with other matzahs. If you have a box of matzot, you know, what we do in my home is that we prearrange and we set aside, designate a certain piece of matzah for everyone on the table beforehand. Place it next to them, right? And then, you know, the person making the bracha will break off a piece of the top, piece of the middle, give it to each person, he'll eat that, and then he already has his, you know, supplement, you know, to fulfill himself to have the certain amount. But no, you don't need to have a kezayit from... Exactly. Yeah.
Technical question. The whole year, are women obligated in Mayon?
Right, so it's a machloket in the Rishonim, and Rav Avadia Yosef says that they are. Yeah.
Also, there's part separate question. Mm-hmm. Is the same thing with Afikoman that we have to have a good night, or is it just...
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Sure, yeah.
And also about the light box, so even if they, like what did they do back in the day, like when they didn't have that? Were they not eating like lettuce?
I don't know, I didn't live back in the day, I can't tell you, but a lot of poskim talk about it already. About the bug problems. Ben Ish Chai, you know, talks a lot about it, because in Iraq, it was very hot over there, there are a lot of flies and mosquitoes, and he warns, you know, very much about not eating certain fruits for that reason. One can argue it was more difficult back in the day than it is today. Yeah. Yeah.
For Eliyahu and Navi, when do we...
Hope he's going to come.
When do we open the door and pour his cup?
Right. So the pouring of the cup should be done in the beginning, I believe. And the custom is that at the end, you know, at the end to open the door. I'm not so familiar with, you know, with the different customs out there also. I believe like at the end of the Seder, I think. Yeah. Okay. All right, it was a pleasure being here. Thank you so much for listening. I know it's very late at night. The fact that you guys are all still awake means that it must have been a good shiur. So thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for everyone who helped organize it. Thank you for the very nice introduction. And I wish you guys all a Chag Kasher Sameach. It should be a good, nice Pesach, a nice kosher Pesach, and an uplifting one. Bezrat Hashem. Yeah.